Well, Mark Howe, it's a real pleasure. Thanks for taking the time to speak with me.
Yeah, glad to be here. Thank you.
You start off the book talking about growing up with a famous father and coming to the realization that not everybody has a famous father. Can you talk about when that happened?
I don't know. I think when you look back at a young age, you start to realize, I think when you're like 4 or 5 years old and everybody wants his autograph, but I mean, from the time I was a little infant to I'm 58 years of age now, I've just looked at my dad as just being a father. And what I've come to know through life experience is that I had a tremendous family background. I had a mother and father who deeply cared about their family and about the upbringing of their children, a very supportive home. And that's why I've been very lucky in my life. But then you get to the other side of it, and I guess I kind of played down the famous part of my father because he always played it down. He is, and I bring him down to the Jersey Shore a lot of times now. He's just an everyday guy. And people a lot of times try to do special things. If I take Dad to a rink or a stadium to watch a game nowadays, and people want him to, they try to protect him by putting him in a private box. And he's, nah, that's good. He likes being around the people. And that's what I experienced as a young child. And so it just so happened my dad was famous, but I never looked at him that way.
So you knew he was famous because other people asked for his autograph, but not because of anything he was doing, any way that he was acting.
No, that's correct. And then I used to try to go to all the Red Wing games that were played at home as much as I could if I wasn't playing hockey. And I believe it was somewhere around 1963. I would have been basically about 8 years old. And at the time, my dad beat Rocket Richard's record to become the league leading scorer. And he got his 544th and 545th goals. Both games were against Montreal. Both games were in Detroit. And I was in the crowd. And I remember, the ovations were deafening and for 10, 15, 20 minutes. And that's when you really know how famous your father is. And I sat there, and it's strange that things go through your head. I remember sitting there, I was the only person in there I could say, that's my dad.
You talk about your father's humble upbringings in Saskatoon. He had no running water at home. He had to shower at school. Did you have kind of an earlier appreciation for being in the middle class because of his upbringing?
Yeah, I think so. We grew up, like I said, I consider it to be nice neighborhoods, a lot of kids around in the neighborhood. And so, when your school is over, your homework's over, I used to gather all the kids to play hockey in the driveway. They were friendly neighborhoods, and I think life was a little different back more in the 60s, where you could go out for Halloween and you didn't have to worry about somebody doing something to your candy or whatever. My parents used to do whatever they could to provide for their children, and sometimes it was taking either myself or my older brother Marty or my younger brother Murray to hockey. And we were playing 100 games a year as kids. So, it was a lot. It was a huge commitment by my mother. And then I think as we got a little bit older into the late 60s, Dad started working for a company in Canada, which is comparable to Sears. It was called Eaton's. And he used to travel for one entire month. But he made enough money from that 1 month where he went and purchased a summer home in northern Michigan, and it enabled us to water ski, and I could go golfing and just have just a tremendous upbringing as a teenager.
What was he doing with Eden? He was doing appearances and things like that?
Doing appearances and promotional tour, and they had a line of clothing called True Line, and it was the Gordie Howe edition. And what Dad used to do, he used to travel all the way from coast to coast across Canada. So he'd start way out on the east, and then I think he would hit every single Eaton store that was across Canada. And when he used to get to the Midwest, usually somewhere around the Winnipeg area, I would fly up from Detroit, and I would spend the last 2 weeks with him on his trip. And like I said, I used to watch him if it was a pretty big city in Canada like Winnipeg, there'd be four Eaton stores. Well, he would spend 3-4 hours at each store signing autographs. And then at the end of the day, we'd come back to the hotel, and he would sit and pre-sign like 2,500, 3,000 cards just so that he could spend more time with the people rather than just signing his name, say, here you go. He, you know, he would personalize it, give it to him, joke around, kid with the kids. But every once in a while, you hit a city where they maybe had one store, and he'd go into his 2-3 hours there, and then we got to – he would do a function for the business people of the town, and you'd have a nice round of golf, or they'd take us fishing or something. So we got to do a lot of father-son things together.
You're a very unique father and son pair. You're one of a very select group of father and son both to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. But an even more select group that consists of just your family, because you and your father and your brother all played on the same team. What was that like? What were those years like both in Houston and in Hartford?
Well, playing with my brother Marty we grew up playing together all those years. I think it all but 2 years we played together on the same team. What was amazing about it was Dad was 45 years of age. He'd been retired 2 years from his years in Detroit. And he came out of retirement to play, and it was really hard on him. And I know Marty and I, we used to come home after 2-3 weeks of training camp, and you know, we looked at it. It was the first time I ever worried about my father, and like we'd say, Mom, we're concerned here. This is like, and then maybe 10 days after that, whatever, boy, it was hard to keep up to him. The greatest thing about it was watching what a great player he was at age 45 and 46. I was a left winger. I think a lot of people in this area here, they know me as a defenseman, but I played left wing till I was like about 24. And I was fortunate enough to be on Dad's line, and he was so good those 2 years. And then we had a great team in Houston, great group of guys. We moved on to Hartford, and things soured a little bit for Marty, and then Dad ended up retiring, and then things got a little sour for me. But it was it's amazing because Dad played till he was 52. And I would, as I got older in my personal career, I'd be 38, 39, and I'd be on the phone calling Dad, and I'd be crawling out of bed in the morning, a lot of mornings, and with my bad back. And I used to just say, like, how did you do this at 52? There was a lot of days I had a hard time as I got it later in my 30s. But that's what – and a lot of people used to ask me when I hit 40, like, why are you still playing? And the only reason you play, and I saw it through my dad, is you just have an absolute love and passion for what you do. And I think once that goes away, then you realize, wow, this is too much pain. It's not worth doing it. But my greatest appreciation is for the first 2 years that Dad played down in Houston. It was something to behold.
I'm sure you've been asked this before, but was it tough playing kind of in the shadow of your father, and particularly on the team with your father? People were seeing both of you at the same time. You were young, but you had already made a name for yourself. You'd been to an Olympics already. And how did that feel?
Well, a lot of I always say we, because I talk about the children as a group. A lot of our upbringing was basically conducted through my mother. Dad was there, but a lot of times he was gone with hockey and stuff. And if we needed him, he would always be there. But Mom was responsible. And basically, I think what she did to try to teach us is because she had imagined that down the road we would be compared to Gordy. Well, if you're being compared to the best ever, you're gonna fail. So I think what she did to try to prevent that was she taught us how to, I guess, set our own goals, our own expectations of ourselves, and then the only person that you have to please is yourself. And actually very much my life, and even to the days I play with the Flyers, and you know, to the end of my career, I don't care what the coaches say. I was always tougher on myself than what the coaches wanted of me, but those were the standards and goals. And it didn't matter what somebody wrote about me in the paper. Yeah, like I said, I didn't read the papers anyway because I learned to judge myself for myself. That's what helped me get through. As far as the playing side, as an 18-year-old, I think I was a little immature. I was on Dad's line. Like I said, Dad was an awesome player, so it helped me a lot on the ice. It helped to get me along a little quicker. But just playing on a line with when you play with somebody like that, it just makes the game so much easier. But and I don't know why. We just had a tremendous – you can play with some great, great players, and you just don't have a chemistry. For some reason, Dad and I had an awesome chemistry together, and it just worked, and it just made it that much more special for me.